Omicron is spreading across Europe, but the impact has varied country to country. Britain's new daily infection rate has climbed to over 90,000, but Italy, which has nearly the same population, is seeing only a fraction of that number. For more, we're joined by NPR's Frank Langfitt in London, Eleanor Beardsley in Paris, and Chico Harlan, Rome bureau chief from our editorial partners at The Washington Post. Thank you all for being here.
You're welcome.
Great to be here, Tanya.
Happy to be here.
Frank, let's start with the UK. Just how much have COVID numbers been spiking in the country?
Yeah, it's really bad here. I mean, as you said, it's officially around 91,000, but scientists here think it's in the hundreds of thousands right now and doubling, I think, every day. And there's an estimate from scientists here that it could hit 600,000 to 2 million a day. It's hard to know. It's a big range. Deaths remain relatively low, but there's some incomplete data. So I was looking at the numbers, maybe 110, 120 a day, which is kind of good news so far. The concern is that the numbers are just going to be so big that you're going to have a lot of people needing to be hospitalized and some people dying, and it's going to flood the healthcare system in January.
Well, what is the current situation with the healthcare system right now?
Well, the healthcare system is okay, but we are beginning to see some strains on infrastructure. So, for instance, they've been canceling hundreds of trains because some of the people who run the trains are either having to self-isolate or they've actually been infected. Also, ambulance response times has been a problem here for a number of years because the National Health Service has been underfunded, but it seems to be getting worse. We had a dinner guest on Saturday. Her name's Hillary Cummings, and her mother last week broke her pelvis. She's 81 years old. They had to wait 7 hours for an ambulance to come, and this is what Hillary had to say.
They said there just weren't enough ambulance crews available to get through their lists as they needed. My understanding is simply COVID is running riot and the services are creaking.
What a terrible situation to experience. And all of this during Christmas week, what's going on with the British economy and how is the government trying to regain control over the spread?
Yeah, Tanya, the government is in such a jam politically on this one. Last week, Boris Johnson put in mild COVID restrictions. They wanted COVID passes for like large events, maybe like soccer games, nightclubs, things like that. 99 of his own party lawmakers from his conservative party rebelled against him. It's one of the biggest rebellions I think he's seen. What he's now doing is kind of hesitating to make any decisions probably until after Christmas, but there's signs that they're going to have to do something because there is so much concern about how rapidly things are spreading here. So we just heard today from essentially the British Treasury that they're going to be offering $1.3 billion to the hospitality industry. That would seem to be a signal that they are going to either be curtailing pub hours or maybe shutting down inside, you know, operations in pubs. I'm not quite sure what we'll see. They're in a very difficult position because nobody wants another shutdown in this country. At the same time, they're very concerned about what hospital wards could look like in the coming weeks.
Well, meanwhile, there's somewhat of a different story over in Italy. Chico, you're in Rome. What's going on with COVID rates there?
Well, I guess if you're looking at it in the spectrum of Europe, it's good news just because rates have gone up gradually, not exponentially. It hasn't been out of control. And yet, Italy's probably back to its highest levels, you know, since the very beginning months of the vaccination campaign, just in terms of pure cases, somewhere between 25,000 to 30,000 in the last couple of days. In terms of the policy moves, Italy has kind of played more cards over the last couple months preventatively than other countries in Europe, making big use of its so-called green pass, requiring that for workers, requiring that way before other countries for indoor dining and for theaters. So perhaps that's also contributed to keeping things more contained. And yet, the answer might just be that Omicron hasn't arrived here with the same force yet that it has in some northern European countries and in the UK. You know, it's a reversal of 2020 when Italy tended to be ahead of the other countries seeing the curve. Italy is behind, but behind can just be a week or two.
You've also been reporting on Denmark. What is the situation there?
Much more like the UK. What they have in common is that they're much more on top of the spread of variants and conducting surveillance than other countries, including the US, including other European countries. So they know what's happening and they can see it almost in real time. The curve is basically an arrow pointing due north. And yet, with all their projections, which look really scary, the variability is huge. And a factor just like what is the severity of Omicron can be the difference between absolute catastrophe and something where the country would have a hard time but muddle through. If it's as severe as Delta, you know, watch out. If it's half as severe, it could be okay.
Eleanor, you're in Paris. The French government feels like they're in a better position than many of their neighbors. Is that true?
Yeah, I listening to my colleagues, it feels like France is somewhere in between the two. It's not in a disaster zone like Britain, but not quite as good as Italy. The French government feels like it's in a good position right now, yes, because of tough and consistent measures since July, when President Emmanuel Macron said to go anywhere, public, basically restaurant, cafe, even to sit out by yourself at a cafe outdoors, you have to show a negative test or a vaccine pass. And this really pushed the vaccination rate up very high. So France has a lot fewer cases than Britain and Germany, but the government has been saying, you know, Omicron, it's about one-third of French cases. It hasn't really hit with full force yet. We're heading into the holidays. There's no curfew, no major new restrictions. They did cancel the fireworks New Year's Eve on the Champs-Élysées. But, you know, people are just being asked to be careful and responsible. And I have to say, the French are wearing their masks inside and outside. I saw a picture of the London Tube yesterday with people actually not wearing their masks, and it seemed frightening. You don't see that here. Mm. And most people think President Macron's done a very good job handling the pandemic.
But Eleanor, you're also reporting on the situation in nearby countries like the Netherlands. What is the overall picture in Western Europe?
It seems to me, talking to different people, I spoke with people in the Netherlands yesterday, there's not one solution. Of course, vaccines is a major thing, but you have to wear masks too. And I spoke to this Dutch journalist, Thijs Niemansedrik, and he said, you know, a lot of people are vaccinated, but the government just let people quit wearing masks at the end of the summer. No one's been wearing masks. And he thinks the government has handled it very sloppily and erratically. And here's what he told me.
This is a hard truth for the Netherlands. We pride ourselves in being a very efficient and well-run country. But as it turns out, in this crisis, we've been doing rather poorly.
In his view, Northern Europe has not handled it as well as Southern Europe. And the figures right now, you know, talking about Italy kind of bear that out.
What's the overall picture? You know, I know that you all are setting a grim tone, but I'm actually wanting to bring you back, Chico, because you mentioned the ways that health officials have implemented lessons learned from the last big wave. Are you hopeful in knowing that they have a blueprint in a way? We're not blindsided by the potential.
I don't know. I mean, just me personally, I tended to be pessimistic about every development over the last 2 years. And that pessimism, you know, is probably the backbone of why I became a journalist. But I haven't been really proven wrong to date. And yet, what makes this different is that at least in Western countries, you do have large vaccination coverage. And the evidence seems strong that that should prevent, in most cases, against severe disease. But the problem becomes societally. And if something spreads so vastly, flooding the whole country, then the people who are frail are much likelier to get infected. And that affects everybody.
And Frank, you've actually been traveling. You've been in three countries over the last few weeks. What are you seeing?
Yes. I was in Norway, the United States, and then I've been back here. This is moving at a very different pace in different countries. There are different stages. And also, I think the awareness of people is dramatically different. When I was in Norway, things were really, really picking up. This was like 12, 14 days ago. There still was not enough mask wearing, but they were really cutting down on gatherings. When I was back in the States for 2 or 3 days, there was not much awareness of this at all, I didn't feel. Then when I came back here, everyone's wearing masks again. So I almost felt, again, I'm not a scientist at all, but I feel like there's waves coming, and some countries haven't, you know, felt that yet. This is a very infectious variant from all that we can tell, and I think that other countries should be expecting that it'll be coming their way.
That was Frank Lankfitt in London. Chico Harlan, he's Rome Bureau Chief with our editorial partners at The Washington Post, and NPR's Eleanor Beardsley in Paris. Thank you all, and stay safe.
Thank you, Tanya. You too.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you so much.